It's a news buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Emily Woodbury, in for Ben Kiefer. FIFA has been all over the headlines recently for corruption allegations, which takes a little bit of attention away from a tournament being held in Canada. It started last Saturday. The FIFA Women's World Cup is being held all over Canada, and tonight in Winnipeg, Sweden and the U.S. will face each other. This is a matchup of two teams that are expected to play deep into the tournament. Here with us to talk about the tournament and the game is Tanya Keith. She's the author of Passionate Soccer Love. She's a soccer enthusiast, and she's from Des Moines. Tanya, you're in Winnipeg right now. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So what's the atmosphere like there?
You know, it's funny because I went to the World Cup in 99 when it was in the U.S., and it's great to see how far women's soccer has come. The stadium is sold out for the U.S. games. There's people who have traveled from all over the United States to come and see our women play tonight and the previous game earlier in the week. And it's exciting to see the growth of women's soccer just in America, in Canada, and worldwide.
Mm-hmm. So how competitive is the matchup tonight?
This should be a great game tonight because, like you said, they are both expected to play far into the tournament. I think the United States is, I never like to say, I feel like it's jinxing to talk about, like, oh, well, we expect to go so far, because nobody likes to see that happen, an unexpected turn of events. And, you know, that's why we play the games. There's always some upset in the tournament. But, you know, Sweden is a talented team, and the United States is one of the favorites. And they're both, it should be a great matchup.
Mm-hmm. And in the past, you've sent us pictures, and we've talked to you in the past, and you've just gotten full American flag gear. Are you going with that tonight?
I am, actually. We got dressed up for the first round of games, and this time we have our three kids with us. When I spoke to you from Brazil last summer, we had two kids, but we brought back a third from Brazil, so she's coming. She's 8 weeks old now. And even the tiniest member of the family gets dressed up for the game.
Great. Well, as you know, FIFA's been in the news a lot as of late for the corruption scandal surrounding the Men's World Cup. And the latest news this week is that they're suspending bidding for the 2026 World Cup. How much of that bad press has touched the Women's World Cup right now?
So I don't think anyone gets into watching soccer because they love FIFA and the corruption that's happened there. I think most soccer fans know that there's FIFA corruption. I mean, you can't look at a World Cup getting awarded to Qatar and think there wasn't some, you know, back office trading that happened there. So I think most people are relieved that FIFA's finally getting called out for their corruption and the scandal that we all kind of knew was taking place but no one could prove. And among the American fans, it's kind of funny because there's no small amount of pride that it was the U.S. Department of Justice that brought the charges against FIFA. And so it's kind of an exciting time to be an American soccer fan and seeing these things finally start to get called out.
And is there a perception that the Women's World Cup has been touched by this?
Well, I mean, the sad thing for women is that the corruption wasn't called out in time to really make this tournament as great as it could be. One of the things that FIFA did that is really unfair is they make the women play on turf, and this would never happen in a men's World Cup. There would be natural grass. It's totally unacceptable for men to play on turf, but somehow Sepp Blatter found it completely okay for our women's players to play on turf.
So they're playing on turf made of rubber and plastic.
Right. And okay. So it's a lot harder on your knees. You can Google online. I think some of the U.S. players showed pictures of the bruises and scrapes. I mean, it's a hard surface. It's really abrasive. So if you slide tackle, you get your legs all banged up. You're much more likely to get injured. It's just not as good a quality playing surface. The ball rolls differently. So it's not as good a surface for the players. It's not as enjoyable to watch for the fans. And, you know, hopefully with FIFA being gutted, future Women's World Cups will be more equal to the men's as far as playing surface and promotion. You know, I mean, Sepp Blatter is famous for saying that if, you know, we want to get more people to watch women's soccer, they should play in shorter shorts and skimpier outfits. And, you know, it's just, it's nice. I hope that this, him being brought down is good news for women's soccer and we can have some more equality and just better, you know, more respect for these athletes. I mean, they're amazing athletes and it's exciting to watch them. And I just hope that, that the clearinghouse of the FIFA corruption will ultimately benefit women's soccer.
Well, and I see here another issue of gender equality is that there's some gender testing going on the women's side to make sure that all the players are actually women biologically. As far as I know, that doesn't happen on the men's side.
Yeah, that's it's kind of amazing to me that those kinds of things are happening in this day and age. It's just, it's a, I don't know what to say. I feel like the women's, there's such more scrutiny on women's soccer. It's really, you know, we all want to have a fair game and fair play, but it's there's nothing fair about the inequality and you know, doing, if you wouldn't do that on the men's side, why are you doing it on the women's side?
Well, Tanya Keith, she's the author of Passionate Soccer Love. She's a Des Moines resident in Canada right now for the Women's World Cup. Tanya, what are you most excited about for tonight's game, U.S. versus Sweden?
So I'm excited to go out there and hopefully win a game against Sweden tonight. I think that this is an amazing opportunity for people to really see U.S. team at their best. I hope they rise to the occasion, and I'm hoping for a great night. There's been beautiful weather. I'm hoping that continues tonight. And, you know, we've had a great time here. There's a lot of great support, great fan support. And I'm just, you know, loving watching the history of soccer unfold for the United States.
All right, Tanya, have a great time in Canada. Have a safe trip back home to Iowa, and thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks a lot.
It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Emily Woodbury, in for Ben Kiefer. We're staying on the field for this next segment, specifically talking about an often ignored aspect of outdoor sports, the field itself. The turf industry is far larger than you'd imagine. The Economic Research Service says it's a $40 billion industry. Here with me to talk about turf grass research being conducted at Iowa State University is Dan Stry. He's a research associate in the horticulture department at Iowa State University. Hello, Dan.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, good. So tell me a little bit about what you're working on. You're working on a specific project at Iowa State.
What we're doing is we're at the Horticulture Research Station, located about 5 to 10 miles north of campus. And out at the farm, we have 15 acres that's devoted to turf grass research. And what we're doing is remodeling a 4-acre plot that will simulate sports fields. And we've got three subplots out there where we'll be able to simulate three different types of sports fields. One will be native soil, one will be a sand cap, and then the other will be top dressed over time. So those three types of fields will really kind of give us a pretty close identification of the three different fields that are being constructed out in the industry today.
So like I said, I mean, this is a big industry, turf grass. But for the average person, you watch a sports game or watch a marching band play, it's like, oh, the grass is pretty green. That looks nice. So what is the need for researching different types of grass?
Well, the need is, one, for traffic levels. Some turf grass species handle traffic better than others. With this, we're going to kind of look at a combination of several different aspects, not just the different types of grasses, but different traffic levels. So when I say that, to try and replicate multi-use fields. So when we run a traffic simulator over a field, we can actually kind of come close to what the same amount of traffic that would be after one football game or three football games and things like that. And we'll be able to kind of compare traffic levels with different fertility rates across several different cultivars. So there's a lot that goes into it just to be able to have a good-looking green field come game day.
We were just talking a minute ago with soccer fan Tanya Keith about the debate between artificial and real grass turf. And it made me think, you know, are there certain safety concerns when it comes to turf? I mean, you don't deal specifically with artificial turf, but when it comes to real grass, is certain grass better for certain activities?
Not that I've seen in any current research. You know, I've heard some rumors where a full stand of turf actually does have benefits compared to, say, a patch that's full of weeds. But with native soil, with any type of athletic field, as long as you're able to have appropriate drainage, good aerification to the soil, and proper irrigation, those three things are going to provide probably the safest environment for an athlete. Mm-hmm. And really kind of at the end of our day, yes, our job is to make sure that fields look great and play great, but it's also the safety for the athletes.
So when you talk about traffic simulation, you want to make it seem like a football game is happening on the field, but you're not actually using football players. I'm imagining, you know, little football robots rolling around the field. How do you do that?
Yeah, so there's a couple different types of machines that are out there. The machine that we have here at Iowa State is kind of more of a ride-on roller. The drums are about 12 to probably 15 inches in diameter, and both of those drums have cleats screwed into them. And one of the drums is geared differently so that there's kind of a lag between the two. And then that kind of lag is what simulates a player's foot kind of planting and then twisting. So we actually do kind of get both the cleat mark action and then also the twisting movement. And there's others out there. This machine that we have, we've had probably for 10 to 15 years, and it's worked real well for us.
You're giving us a call from Ames. Right now, there's a turf conference going on right now. I'm trying to imagine what a turf conference entails. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so the conference we have this week is the NCERA meeting, and that is the North Central Extension and Research Activity. So that pretty much entails a lot of the turf grass researchers and extension agents within the Midwest. So as far north as Minnesota, down to Missouri, and then all the way over from Ohio to Nebraska. And so it's just kind of a smaller conference compared to some of the others. But what this meeting allows us to do is to meet with everybody in the neighboring states to see what they're doing compared to what we're doing, the differences in programs, what the size of undergrads is here versus Purdue or, you know, any other area, but also looking at what they're doing new in the classroom, what they're doing new as far as extension to be able to keep people interested and excited with it.
What got you interested in turf grass research?
With turf grass research, it was, I'll be honest, I've kind of almost been in the turf industry ever since I've been about 12 or 13 years old. Kind of started my own lawn care business. And from there, it just kind of bloomed and blossomed into something much bigger than I ever expected. After finishing my undergraduate degree here at Iowa State, I was given the opportunity to go on for a master's. And with that, it was able to, allow me to kind of take it to that next level. I always enjoyed the classwork and then taking it to the field. And, you know, with turf grass research, it's really a great opportunity for me to see what's new out there and ways to try new things. You know, I'm always at the facility worried about having a dead plot of grass. And Dr. Nick Christian's kind of in charge of the turf grass program at Iowa State has always told me, if you kill grass, it's a great way to explain to others what not to do. And that's just as important as what to do right. So I have fun with it out here. And,
Dan Stry, turf grass enthusiast and research associate at Iowa State University. Dan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, thank you very much, too, for having me on. I appreciate it.